Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from Carthage College, reminding you of two special music opportunities this weekend at Carthage. Tonight at 7:30 and Sunday afternoon at 3, it's the Opera Workshop, an hour of Offenbach. 60 minutes of fun with one of music history's quirkiest and most imaginative geniuses. And Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock, the homecoming concert of the Wind Orchestra, just back from a triumphant tour to Japan. That concert in Siebert Chapel, free and open to the public. And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD-HD. I'm Gregory Berg, and it is that last aforementioned item that is the primary topic of today's morning show. For most of the hour, we're going to be talking about the Wind Orchestra's amazing trip to Japan with Dr. James Ripley, who is the conductor of the Wind Orchestra and director of instrumental music at Carthage. And joining him today is one of the students privileged to go along on this trip, Liz Dopke, who is a freshman at Carthage, who hails from Cary, Illinois. She plays French horn and enjoyed what amounts to a trip of a lifetime from what I've heard from just about every student I've talked with about this great trip. We welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg. It's great to be here.
Thanks. Good to have both of you here. Dr. Ripley, before we start talking about this specific trip, I think it would be great for our listeners to be reminded, if they've heard this before or learned for the first time, your own really special and intriguing connection with the nation of Japan. When did all of this begin?
Well, back in 2000, as a student at the Eastman School of Music, I had transformed into a faculty position, and part of that experience took the wind ensemble to Japan for a whole month during June. And so I was privileged to go along on that trip and was the clinician, actually, for a number of high school and university groups along the way. That was part of the mission of the tour, was to develop a better understanding about the American way of conducting and working with the groups. And I could talk about that more, but it's not really our time this morning. But the thing that was so advantageous for Carthage in the long run, and myself as well, was a time at Sakuyo University in Kurashiki, Japan. And that was one of the clinics that I did along the way that allowed me to continue to work with them in a real way twice a year for a number of years since that time. And that was how it all got started for me to be in Japan as much as I have been, 21 right. times now.
21 times, yeah. since the year 2000. That first time, did you know any Japanese? I mean, was there anything on the radar here that this made sense to be part of your life, or was this in sort of a shot out of the blue?
I was in the same boat that all of our students, or most of our students, were in as they traveled this first time. I had very limited knowledge of the language. I understood the musical context because we had been studying some Japanese music that we were going to play on tour, but that was about the extent of it. But as it's turned out, the musical connection's always been the great bridge anyway. So as a conductor using nonverbal communication primarily, so I didn't have to talk a lot, it was a way that I could communicate effectively, even though the spoken language was a mystery.
Right. In brief, what has taken you back to Japan so many times, 21 times in all? I mean, doing what?
It's been the connection musically that's continued to bring me and now the group back. I tell them frequently along the lines of the trip that I found this to be so valuable to myself personally that I just want them to experience it, just to share what I see and feel when I'm over there. Largely, it's a sense of real committed respect for each other and the music. That's what comes across so dramatically there. And we have that here also, but it's just a different feel. Some of it is that the whole music making of the band world in Japan is a club activity. It's in the schools in a somewhat different way, but it's more that the students study after school and a lot of times all weekend in a very intense way rather than during the school day. And so there's just a different sensibility about what they do. And having our time together during January doing the same kind of thing, it was 3 hours of class and 3 hours of rehearsal. And at one time it was 17 straight days that we saw each other. So it's a lot.
Pretty intense. Yeah. So when you've gone back to Japan, sometimes it's been with the Carthage Wind Orchestra. How many times? I mean, how many tours like the one you just completed have you done?
This was our fifth time.
And then other times when you've gone back to Japan, it's been sort of like what you did the first time? I mean, is that would that have been what you did there?
There is an element of what this last tour entailed that harkens back to the very first trip. That was a residency at Sakuyo University, the same place that I started working at as a guest faculty. But that first residency, I think we were there for 5 or maybe even 6 days. And the only concert that we did was at the end of that residency. Mm. Now we were there, I think, 2.5 days. And we had just a couple of rehearsals and we did a concert. And then we've done an extensive tour aside from that trip. So it's been an evolution from just a residency to now an actual tour. Mm.
So tell us about, and this is where we'll start hearing from Liz Dobke, the student you have with you today. Tell us about the kind of preparation that is involved. I don't mean so much the logistics. I can't even imagine what that means to take a group to a place like Japan. But in terms of the on-the-ground prep with the students, just how long a period are we talking about and what kinds of things happen during that intense time, Liz?
In addition to the 3 hours of rehearsal throughout January, I remember starting working on the music for the Japan tour early in first semester. So we're talking back, I think it was October, November maybe, we started passing out music and looking at it then. So we've been looking at it for a while. We've gotten really close to this music.
Right. And we'll be hearing a little bit, a couple of examples from it in just a moment. How about outside of the musical preparation for it, what other kind of preparation was part of undertaking this?
Yeah, during J-Term, our class was actually called Mythological Japan, and it was a Carthage symposium. So we were able to take a sort of a language and culture class on Japan. And we took that with one of the Japanese professors, a target language expert at Carthage. And that was really, really cool. I really enjoyed being able to learn about, you know, the religion or the different religions in Japan. And we even learned a little bit of Japanese, which was helpful. Mm-hmm. Some survival questions and how to introduce ourselves to the students. Mm-hmm. And that was really insightful. It was cool.
How many students who I suppose were seniors this year were going back for their second time?
The real answer to that, I guess, is just one.
Oh.
It was a younger group that traveled this time, which was really remarkable. I think from day one, I said, you're not going to be freshmen. We're just going to call you first years. And it'll be that you have to just be a part of this group that does special things from the outset. So I don't know. There's probably 7 or 8 freshmen in the group. There's a good number of sophomores. But as it turns out, with either student teaching or other things. There was the one senior that went, Carl Steffens, and then we actually had some people that had gone before but had actually graduated. Mm. So, for example, one of our trombone players graduated in December. So technically he wasn't a student anymore, but he went along. And we had a couple of people who are student teaching in the spring. So they're kind of seniors. But in this case, even though they're not on campus anymore, they are there were people that didn't go the first time. I was just trying to think through you know, some of the circumstances with all of the different people.
Well, and the other thing is, and we shouldn't get into this probably in too specific a fashion, but I suspect this is the kind of trip that represents a considerable expense for the students. So I'm assuming this is nothing you can require a student to do, and are there certain students where this is simply beyond their financial resources to be able to undertake this?
It is a difficult thing to ask students to continue to add to their considerable tuition anyway, but the college has a support system for us as well as far as the travel for any of our international tours. There's a support system in place which helps. It doesn't cover the whole cost, but it does help. And we also were able to offer some scholarship opportunities for students to lessen the load for those that really could not afford it. So the college helped us make it possible.
And I suppose this is one of those things where this ends up being, as I said earlier, a trip of a lifetime. And I suspect because of these supports in place, you couldn't possibly get to Japan and have an experience like this for such a relatively modest amount of money, or it's a reasonable amount of money given what you get.
Correct. I think the main thing is that the cost of the airfare is considerable just in itself. Just to get to Japan is something. But then once we're there, we had just an amazing concert organizer that was involved in a company called the Brain Music of Japan. And that company and our organizer in particular was just tremendous in arranging everything and keeping the costs reasonable to allow us to do something like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Dr. James Ripley from Carthage College, a faculty colleague of mine there. He's the director of instrumental music, conductor of the Wind Orchestra, which is just back from an extraordinary tour to Japan. And with him is Liz Dobke, a freshman from Cary, Illinois, who plays French horn in the Wind Orchestra. And she was one of the students fortunate enough to be part of this trip. Liz, did you have any hesitation about undertaking this trip, or did you dive in happily and enthusiastically from the start?
I think I pretty much dove in, because one of the reasons that brought me to Carthage College was the opportunity to travel over J-term. That's something that not every university offers, and that was really, really cool. And I have loved music since I was able to start playing, and being able to go over to Japan or any place, really, and play was really, really cool.
Hmm. So tell us about the flight. I mean, how long a flight are we talking about, and what kind of a trip did it represent?
Yeah, it was a 13-hour plane ride to get there, which is a lot. That was the longest I'd ever been on. But it wasn't too bad. Once we got there, you know, you just slept on the flight. It's about all you could do. And once we were there, we traveled a lot by bus, and then we were able to take a bullet train one day between Tokyo and Kyoto.
So describe what these roughly 10, you said you spent 10 nights there. I mean, the thing about adding days and losing days makes it a little complicated to calculate, but roughly 10 nights spent on this tour. What was sort of the balance of the tour in terms of nights that were concerts versus nights that were days that were free versus, I mean, sort of what was the shape of the tour in that respect?
For the most part, the overarching design was that we started in Tokyo and we had a concert the very next day that we arrived. We came in, and then we played a concert at an elementary school next to Tokyo Disney. And that was a great experience, and got the tour off to a wonderful start. We played for the whole elementary school of nearly 800 kids, had a chance to play with their elementary band, which in Japan is pretty good. It's not the same as our elementary bands working their way through hot cross buns the first time. This was terrific. And so in general, the tour was set to have activities and sightseeing or other types of concert events during the day. And then evenings were largely free until we then started the tour process later. So there was some sightseeing after Tokyo. Then we got to Kurashiki for the short residency. And then at that point, then the evenings were concerts. And then still getting back at 10 o'clock, so some free time, even though it's late at night. But free time for college students is largely starts at 10 o'clock at night sometimes.
So, Liz, as you look back, not at the music making, we'll circle back to that in a little bit, but outside of the music making, what are some of your most potent memories of this trip to Japan in terms of things that you did or saw or experienced?
I really enjoyed our time spent in Kyoto. It was, you know, so historical, and that city is just beautiful, and all that we got to see. Some things that come to mind are the Golden Pavilion that we were able to visit and walk around. That was amazing. And our time was, although it was short in Hiroshima, we got to visit the Peace Memorial Museum, and that was touching in many ways, and it was amazing to be able to see that. It was just really, really cool.
Were you anywhere close to the areas of Japan that were so devastated by the earthquake and the tsunami, or is that an entirely different part of the country?
A little bit further north and east than where we were, actually. Tokyo was as close as that would have been, and certainly the whole country felt that in certain ways, but as far as the physical damage, no, that was a little bit further north. And
so you didn't see any signs of that?
No.
Where did you stay?
In hotels, and really in very nice hotels. That was a surprising thing, and I was pleasantly surprised when we found that out.
So not Motel 6?
No.
No, but we did have one night in a traditional Japanese hotel as well, and Liz could probably tell you the differences in that.
Yeah, it was a traditional Japanese ryokan, where they don't have our traditional beds, but they have futons, which are about, I don't know, 2 or 3 inches from the ground, and it was just a big, big room. There were 6 of us to a room, and it was a really nice experience. It was on the inland sea, I believe, and it was just very beautiful, the surroundings and the inn itself.
Tell us about the Japanese cuisine that you experienced. I'm sure that Cary, Illinois has several Japanese restaurants, so this was nothing new for you. But tell us what you maybe most enjoyed and maybe did not enjoy quite so much.
Yeah, it was interesting, but for the most part, I really enjoyed the cuisine. It was good. You know, a lot of rice, almost every meal, and a lot of noodles as well. But a few things that were really cool for me to try were octopus and jellyfish. We got to try those at the ryokan. I don't really care for them, but it was awesome to try it. And they eat a lot of tofu, a lot of seaweed, different things like that.
Okay.
I'm not a very big fan, but it was great to try.
Well, I think that's really neat. I don't know a whole lot of people who would say, I mean, I tried this, I didn't like it, but I'm glad I tried it. I mean, that's a bit of a non sequitur, but I think it just speaks to your adventurous spirit, which is great.
So. And I think a lot of the students just went by the motto, try it first and then ask what it is later.
Yes.
What did you feel like as Americans in Japan? I mean, first of all, I mean, it often depends on where you are on the planet, where sometimes it isn't strange to be a Westerner. I mean, out on the street, you're not the only one there. And then there are other places you go where you really feel like you might as well be from another planet in terms of feeling very different from the folks who live there. What by and large, the places you were, what did it feel like to be an American there? And did you feel welcome?
Yeah, I think as a whole, we did feel very welcome. The Japanese culture is very hospitable. I think we felt that everywhere. But we didn't see too many other tourists. A few, I think, we could tell were from America. But overall, I think you could tell we were tourists, especially on our sightseeing trips. But for the most part, people were welcoming. They allowed us to just be there and do our thing.
And in Japan, there's a great deal of tourism, but maybe more localized to the Eastern Hemisphere, where there'll be Chinese visitors, Korean visitors, others from Cambodia. So in our sensibility as Westerners, you know, envisioning who would be, you know, tourists, it's not as easy to discern it at times visually, but certainly it's a country that has a lot of tourism, but yeah, you're right. Not as many Westerners as what we might have thought, and it could have been that it was in January too. That people aren't traveling so much.
An off time,
right? So, how did you, generally speaking, spend your free time, and not just you, but your colleagues too? I mean, how were the free hours generally spent?
Yeah, we didn't have too many, but a few hours here and there to grab lunch or dinner. Largely consisted of just kind of wandering around near the hotel. And that was great because you could, all the restaurants had these window displays with all the food. They have plastic food of their entire menu, which not only helped us not being able to speak a lot of Japanese, there was a lot of pointing and smiling, but it worked out just the same. And, you know, all the little tourist shops around the hotels, Kurashiki, was one of the very, very cool places for me. Lots of little tourist places and cool little ice cream shops here and there. It's fun to visit.
And what is Tokyo like? That, I think, once upon a time was the world's largest city. I don't think it is anymore, but what's it like?
I heard from our tour guide that we can fit 3 Chicagos inside Tokyo.
Wow.
So if that can help you visualize it.
Holy cow.
We had the opportunity to go up into Tokyo Skytree, which is just a big, like a big space needle. And it just goes on forever. I don't think we could see the end of the city. It just kept going.
The end of Tokyo.
Yeah, of Tokyo.
Right, about the only other thing on the horizon that you could see after the city had kind of disappeared into the horizon was Mount Fuji. But that was an amazing sight as well. Yeah, the Skytree is about 3 football fields high. It's about 300 meters. So it's a sizable structure.
Wow.
So you can see a long way, and it's all city.
Wow.
But for me, coming from near Chicago, it wasn't as high as Chicago. The buildings, there were many buildings, but they weren't super tall.
So fewer skyscrapers,
right,
in a sense. Yeah.
Right.
Wow. Well, it all sounds exciting. And, of course, we also want to talk about the music making, which, of course, was the heart and soul of why you were there in the first place. For those of you just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. James Ripley, who conducts the Carthage Wind Orchestra. And Liz Dobke is along, a freshman French horn player in the Wind Orchestra. Their homecoming concert, titled Mythological Japan, is this Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. Dr. Ripley, one of the things I noticed is that there's a fairly potent representation of Japanese music or themes on your program. I'm reminded that Dr. John Wind, who was at Carthage before you came along, but the conductor of the Carthage Choir for 35, 36 years, something like that, when he would take the choir to Europe, they sang almost entirely American repertoire, because the way he described it to me is, you know, the people of Hamburg don't need us to sing Bach for them. So, and they sing Bach a lot better than probably we're going to. So you know, they want to hear something of us that we bring to it. It looks like you're and I'm not saying like that's right and you're wrong, but you've clearly put this program together not adhering to that thought, but rather feeling like there's something important about playing Japanese music for the Japanese. Just Talk about that choice.
Largely, the experience of the students in the wind orchestra is one where we consciously try to change the sound of the group based upon the composer and where the music and when the music was written. So sometimes that's done with instrumentation. We may do a piece that only has 12 people in it, so obviously that's going to sound different. But we deliberately talked about how a Japanese band sounds and how Japanese composers write for this particular kind of sound, which is very clarinet, horn, euphonium, tuba-oriented. Hmm. A lot of times they actually have trouble finding people to play bassoon and not a lot of oboes. So those instruments aren't scored for significantly or heavily in a lot of the writing for bands. So it's a special sound. So we wanted to play a Japanese piece so that we could go there and make that sound, which I think we accomplished. So as we play the concert on Sunday, we should sound different when we're playing the American pieces than when we're playing the Japanese pieces. And I think those are the only two countries that we go on this trip. But that's part of the idea. And also, you're right about the programming, because there was one concert where we were restricted by the number of pieces we could play, and that was the first one to go out, was that we didn't need to play that piece at that concert because we had American music to share. Mm. And we didn't need to do the Japanese piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So explain the title, Mythological Japan.
Well, that goes to the idea of the Carthage Symposium, and what we were really studying was the delivery of music or the delivery of storytelling, that it matters how you say something just as much as what you say. And so one of the really fun things that the students experienced was to study these different mythological figures or gods in Japan are called kami. And they took the opportunity then to write their own story about one of the kami, and then they shared those stories at the traditional hotel when we were visiting there. So it was storytelling night, and that was part of the idea of the whole Carthage Symposium, was mythological Japan. What does that mean?
Huh. So, like, Liz, you had to do that.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, why don't you recite your story for us right now? Just
Unfortunately, I can't do that. But that was very cool. And I also remember we wrote another story about one of the pieces that we played. One of the Japanese pieces told a story, as almost every piece does. And that, although we didn't recite that, we turned that in as our final paper for the class. Hmm. And that was very memorable. It was interesting to be able to look at the music in a different way,
yeah,
as telling a story.
Great. Dr. Ripley, you've shared with me a couple of pieces, and through the wonders of technology, we hope we'll play an excerpt from both of these. So tell me what we want to listen to first.
The first one is the link to the piece called Sea Goddess.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly the piece that Liz was describing. This is a musical depiction of the figure Torino Iwaku Sufune. And this is a kami that is basically a boat that is carrying the bird. It's a complicated story, and that was one of the reasons why I thought it was good for the students to just write their own about what was going on in this piece. But that, you'll get the idea. It's very traditional sounding at the beginning.
So they would listen to this music and then imagine their own story about what is being depicted musically.
Correct.
What a fabulous idea. What a great assignment. So here, we hope, is the piece called Sea Goddess.
Thank you.
Wow, I feel terrible potting this down, but that just simply must. But again, this is a portion of a piece called Sea Goddess from a Japanese composer. What a fabulous piece. And fun to play, Liz?
Very fun. It became very special the more we played it.
I believe it. Dr. Ripley, you have another piece that, and I believe this is a commission that was done by a composer who's actually been a guest on this program before.
Right. Stacy Garup was commissioned to take two movements of her mythological symphony and arrange those for the Wind Orchestra for our Japan trip. She has graciously written some very special music for us along those same lines. So the movement called Penelope Waits is basically the story of Ulysses or Odysseus, however you want to call it, his wife, as she's mm-hmm. waiting for 20 years for him to come back from the Trojan Wars. And it begins with just a solo oboe, and she's kind of spinning this tapestry as she's waiting, and other strands of music join her, and then she's also weaving this tale of waiting. And then at night, she actually unravels the tapestry, because she's also promised some of her suitors that as soon as this tapestry is done, then she'll actually marry one of them, because then she'll know that Odysseus is really died in the war. So it's a very lovely piece, though, and soloist Miranda Aldrich from Aurora, Illinois, is the person that you'll hear beginning this piece. But yes, the Penelope Waits is one of two movements of this mythology suite that Stacy wrote for us.
Very good. And this recording is what?
This is from our concert in Kurashiki, Japan. This is the Wind Orchestra playing in Toka Hall, and just a little bit of this will give you the flavor of this wonderful scoring.
Very good. Here it is. Really, really beautiful music by Stacey Garup, again, out of something called the Mythology Suite. And so did I characterize that correctly as commissioned by the Carthage Wind Orchestra?
Right, exactly. There's a second movement that's not nearly as beautiful to the ear, but certainly a moving and an exciting work called The Lovely Sirens. And Stacey writes with what she calls lyrical storytelling. And this is evident not only in the Penelope piece, but also in The Sirens, but in a very different way. And uses lots of wonderful special effects, stopped horn that Liz plays great, and wind machine, and lots of excitement, and built on the idea that these sirens are luring the sailors to their death along the sides of a cliff. So the boat turns in, and then you hear this motive of SOS, the Morse code that she builds into it, and it becomes more and more frantic, and is just amazing piece.
Cool. Can't wait to hear it. Can't really wait to hear it. Wow. Very, very good. I don't want to forget to mention that you had a couple of special guests along with you on this trip. First of all, a couple of very recent Carthage grads who came along, and then a couple of not Carthage students at all, but who are also a part of the trip.
The great good fortune that we've had to have students at Carthage that have been amazing, you know, musicians is one of the real joys of being at the school. And certainly two of those folks were able to join us. Justin Hall, who's from Elburn, around the far western suburbs, came back to play percussion for us. And also Allison Shafranak from Libertyville played clarinet again with us, and actually took a big solo on When the Saints Go Marching In. So you'll be able to hear that again on Sunday as well. Her clarinet teacher, Jennifer Woodrum, was our soloist on the tour, and played this amazing work by Scott McAllister called Black Dog. And that piece is worth coming to the concert just on its own, because it takes this very short phrase from the Led Zeppelin song Black Dog and then expands on that in all sorts of ways. And the clarinet becomes really an electric guitar soloist all the way through, all sorts of distortion effects and growls and flutters and amazing high and low register. It's like listening to a guitar solo through this, but also some of the most beautiful music you'll ever hear in your entire life is part of this as well, to contrast all of the fast music.
Cool.
Also, we were lucky to have Fumi Nakayama come along with us to play piano. She's one of our piano faculty at Carthage, and originally from Japan. So this was nice that she could come and be a part of things as well.
Very good. So you have no regrets about the time and money and energy that you devoted to this trip, Liz, I can tell.
Not at all. It was a really incredible experience, and I'm really grateful to Dr. Ripley for taking the trip there and the opportunity to go. It was fantastic.
Great. Well, certainly everything you've said and the music we've listened to just makes us very excited about Sunday afternoon's homecoming concert. Again, Mythological Japan, the homecoming concert for the Carthage Wind Orchestra, will be this Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock, in Carthage's Siebert Chapel. The concert is at 1 o'clock and not terribly lengthy, because I know it's going to be done in plenty of time for people who want to scurry over to the recital hall for the opera workshop. And there's probably even time for people to scurry down from Carthage to First United Methodist, where they have an exciting chamber group playing at 3 o'clock. And your concert's going to be done well before that to allow people to take in whatever they want to, including the Super Bowl on Sunday. But anyway, a lot of great music is going to be part of this concert. And we should probably mention that in addition to the Japanese-themed things, I mean, there's Paul Bunyan at the start and Stars and Stripes Forever at the end, so it's a bit of Americana woven in as well. Dr. James Ripley, the conductor of the Wind Orchestra, director of instrumental music at Carthage, great to have you back, and wonderful to hear about this terrific trip.
Thank you, Greg. It's great to be able to share this with your audience, and we always welcome the opportunity to talk with you.
And Liz Dobke, great to meet you. You've just been a fleeting, blurry presence running down the hall with your French horn. And so I'm happy to meet you today for the first time and wish you well with the rest of your time at Carthage College.
Thank you very much.
Glad you could be here. For the closing minutes of the hour, we're going to hear just a little bit more from pianist Janie Parsons. She is actually also the artistic director of the group Latitude 49, which, as I mentioned earlier, is going to be playing a concert Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock as part of the Fine Arts at First series at First United Methodist Church. The name of the group, Latitude 49, refers to the latitude line between Canada and the United States. And this group of six musicians is actually half American, half United States, and half Canada. And here's just a brief portion of our conversation about the group. One of the things that's clear when we look at your biographies, that is for the six of you, is that you are all busy musicians in one way or another, and in a couple of cases, and certainly with you, you are someone who is also involved in other groups, in other ensembles. How does that typically work with most of you in terms of being a part of Latitude 49 versus being a part of other ensembles, you know, kind of, in a sense, cobbling together various experiences and only in order to make a living as professional musicians? And what does it feel like to kind of shift back and forth between different groups who perhaps have, in a sense, different missions?
That's a really good question as well. Well, you know, I think we all find it pretty exciting to the switching back and forth, and there certainly isn't any boredom in any of our lives. You know, several of our players do work with orchestras, and you know, many of us play with various groups and freelance and teach and all sorts of things. And so, you know, one of the things we really do believe is that the diversity of our members and what we do actually is our strength in terms of coming together and bringing those forces together. You know, we have, for example, our clarinetist is based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, as is our saxophonist, and both of them have active careers there. And so what they bring to the table is a lot of experience in different ways. And, you know, it's sort of like a surge of energy when we all come together, because we plan these things out and we have regular meetings. And then when we're all finally in the same room together, there's a real energy there. And I think it's pretty exciting. And it's pretty common in today's world for musicians that musicians have really varied careers and do have their hands in a lot of different things. And so that's pretty exciting, too, in terms of what we learn as we do. Every time I have a concert with any ensemble, I learn things. And I learn a lot from our gatherings as well. And so it's been a sort of a strengthening thing that we don't just only do Latitude 49, but that we have all of these experiences and we bring them together.
Hmm. Pianist Janie Parsons not only plays piano, but is the artistic director for this marvelous group, Latitude 49, that specializes in contemporary chamber music. And their concert on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock is actually titled She. And every piece that is going to be performed on Sunday afternoon's concert will have been composed by a female composer, including Stacey Garup, mentioned during our conversation about the Carthage Wind Orchestra's homecoming concert. And I do want to reiterate that there is plenty of time through the course of the afternoon to take in both of those great events, the homecoming concert of the Wind Orchestra at Carthage at 1 o'clock and the performance of Latitude 49 at 3 o'clock, and both of those wonderful concerts free and open to the public. Monday on the morning show, I'm excited to welcome into our studios Dr. Jonathan Shaler from the University of Wisconsin Parkside. We're going to be talking about communication in the era of President Donald Trump. We'll be talking a bit about the communicative style of the Trump administration and the communicative style of Donald Trump himself and the way he likes to express himself, his unique sort of rhetoric. And also we will talk about the way in which we can try to talk about some of the issues that have us so sharply divided at the moment. How can we have helpful, meaningful, thoughtful conversations. That's on Monday. Tuesday, Dr. Yuri Maltsev is going to be joining me, a Carthage faculty colleague, offering his perspective on President Donald Trump and also talking about his recent trip to South Africa. We remind you that the morning show is archived on our website, wgtd.org. Click on Talk. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from Carthage